This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated opposition computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing the copies to the media, Senate officials told the Boston Globe. From the spring of 2002 until at least April 2003, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. With the help of forensic computer experts from General Dynamics and the U.S. Secret Service, the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms has interviewed about 120 people to date and seized more than half a dozen computers, including four judiciary servers, one server from the office of Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, and several desktop hard drives. A barrage of mortar fire struck a U.S. military encampment in central Iraq, killing two American soldiers and critically wounding a third, the military said Thursday. Insurgents fired mortars and rockets at a U.S. military encampment outside the town of Baqaba, 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, on Wednesday evening, killing the two soldiers and critically wounding another. The two deaths raised to 505 the number of U.S. service members who have died since the U.S.-led coalition launched the Iraq War on March 20th. A seven-state crime database launched with $12 million in federal funds is a more powerful threat to privacy than its organizers acknowledge, the American Civil Liberties Union alleged Wednesday after obtaining documents relating to the program. The law enforcement officials and private database company behind the Multi-State Anti-Terrorism Information Exchange, or MATRIX, contend it is merely an investigative tool that helps police quickly gather already available information on suspects. But the ACLU and other privacy advocates allege that the program too closely resembles a scrapped Pentagon program that aimed to mine a vast data pool to spot patterns useful in terrorism investigation. More IE America News after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
A hiking magazine apologized on Thursday after it published a route plan that would have sent walkers striding into thin air off the north face of Britain's largest mountain. The magazine missed out a vital bearing needed to guide climbers off the summit of the Scottish mountain in bad weather. Anyone who had followed the magazine's directions would have plunged down a sheer cliff into nearby Gardaloo Gully. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
In case you were busy drinking eggnog and missed this story, Bushco delivered a lovely Christmas gift to the timber industry just before the holiday break. By executive fiat, Alaska's Tongass National Forest will be exempted from the roadless rule, a provision that prohibits road building in millions of acres of our dwindling national forests. The roadless rule was designed to stop the timber giants from clear-cutting these precious natural resources. It's a rule that works. No roads, no clear-cutting. But the industry, which already has stripped a 500,000 acres of old-growth trees from the Tongass, wants more and has been using its money connections to Bush and Company to get its way. Now the Forest Service has dutifully given in, declaring that an Alaskan lawsuit effectively forced the agency to allow more logging. Hogwash. The Bushites simply chose not to fight the lawsuit, which independent legal organizations say the agency could have won. It's deregulation by capitulation. Bush bureaucrats deceptively claim that we really shouldn't fuss about this exemption because it allows logging on only about 3% of the roadless acres still available. The deception here is that this particular 3% encompasses many of the forest's oldest trees, most valuable watersheds, and the habitat of an extraordinary collection of wildlife. It's like a surgeon saying not to worry, for he's only cutting away 3% of your total body tissue. But that 3% includes your heart. The Tongass exemption is only the start of gutting the roadless rule for all of our national forests. Already, the Bushites are moving administratively to let state governors decide which forests should be roadless, giving a handful of state politicians controlling power over forests that belong to all Americans. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this giveaway to corporate interests, call the Heritage Forest Campaign at 202-887-8800.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her
right.
boogieing?
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Boy, it's nice to be back here with you. We were in Washington, D.C., Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Monday, of course, we did the program live from Washington. Rama Schneider filled in ably for us on Tuesday and Wednesday. Rama, an old friend and a talk show host here in Vermont. And Tuesday, we attended a meeting that was put on by a group called Democracy Radio, at which Ted Kennedy came and talked to us. I don't have the list in front of me, but it was Hillary Clinton, Tom Daschle. It was quite an extraordinary cavalcade. Senator Debbie Stabenow and so on. Joe Biden, actually. I want to try and get him on the program because he gave a presentation on what could happen in the Middle East as the downside of our invading Iraq. I mean, it's truly scary what could happen in the Middle East as a result of our invasion in Iraq if this thing goes bad. And it's just right on the razor's edge. Right on the razor's edge. And in fact, we've got some clips from that presentation that we'll be playing in our third hour today. In our first hour, I wanted to get into the State of the Union address. We had said that we would run a contest. I have a list of let's call them misstatements, and a specific number of them. Now, you know, I may be right or wrong on this, and if you can convince me that I'm wrong with your number, I may recalibrate it, but for right now, I've got a number of specific misstatements. Some would call them lies, I suppose you could. I want to include things that are misdirections rather than simply just misstatements of fact, but misstatements of fact that are in a context that may be technically accurate. You know, it's like saying we created 1,000 new jobs when in that same month, a couple hundred thousand people lost their employment benefits and therefore the were no longer counted in the statistics. And whoever calls 1-800-TALK-YES and tells our erstwhile board operator, Shar Jones, who I am right this minute typing the number to, tells her the number of
misstatements. Oh, what the heck. The number of lies in the State of the Union address will win a copy of a book I wrote called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. In fact, we can send you, if you are a collector, if you would like, a galley of the new edition, new and improved edition, which is coming out, I believe, in April or May. This is new, updated for 2004, and a galley is the pre-publication copy that you send out to newspapers for review and that they go to people who might write blurbs for the book. And they're actually quite collectible. If you look on eBay, you find galleys, particularly for some of the more well-known and famous books, can be very expensive. A lot of people collect them. So I've got a galley here of Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, that which is just, it looks like a book, you know, except that it's got a slightly different cover from a normal book. It says, you know, reader's copy and all that kind of thing. Fancy stuff. An insight into the interior of the publishing business. Anyhow, so much happening here. So much happening. Homeland Security. The federal government's General Accounting Office revealed that the Pentagon has been lax in monitoring just who was buying its surplus chemical and biological equipment, that such items could easily have found their way to terrorists and been bought at deep discounts. But not only are we selling stuff to Osama, but we're offering him discounts. On the other hand, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency admitted that it had been internet monitoring a webcam of a factory on Scotland's Isle of Islay that it said represented a chemical weapons lab. Now, they checked this thing out, they monitored it, they did surveillance on it, they tracked it down, and they discovered, guess what? It was a whiskey distillery. So, your tax dollars at work, yours and mine. But let's get into the State of the Union. I thought, and I know you had probably some discussion of this yesterday with Rahm. I talked with him this morning, and I caught about 20 minutes of yesterday's program from the Washington airport, but it was just toward the end there. And then our computer crashed, and then we had to get on the airplane. But I know that on Tuesday you had a lot of discussion about the Iowa caucuses. And if you want to discuss that, give me a call. Louise and I watched the returns, and we watched the concession and victory speeches, I don't know what you'd call them, by each of the four leading candidates, Edwards, Gephardt, Kerry, and Dean. And when Dean got on and started his rant, Louise and I looked at each other and just gasped. I mean, it was just one of those, oh, my God, I can't believe he's doing this moments. And my comment at the time, and I continue to have it, he should have known that the protocol, that there is a protocol for the equivalence of an acceptance speech. And he should have known that there was a camera in the room that was pointed at him, that was feeding all the networks, and that was going to be replayed over and over and over again. And this was his moment. I mean, John Edwards was so eloquent in those moments after. John Kerry did a good job. Even Dick Gephardt did an excellent job. And Howard Dean did a rant. And it was the fine rant for the group he was in. He had some 3,000 people in the room or whatever it was, and he was going to pump them up, you know. And that's a great thing to do. But first, give your speech for the press. So the fact that he didn't get that says to me, number one, he's not real experienced at this, which is, we all know, you know, so I think we can cut him some slack on it. But number two, that whoever is handling him, either he is ignoring, which I find hard to believe on something this important, or they've really dropped the ball. He should have somebody around him who has been in a national campaign who could have set this thing up. Tom Harkin standing behind him, rolling his eyes, going, ouch, ouch, ouch. I mean, you could just see Tom Harkin wanting to run up there and grab him and say, Howard, the camera's on. So time will tell if this is his Ed Muskie moment or not. And whether the American people, whether this is the image that is going to stick or not. It's going to be very difficult for him to overcome that. It's just like the other day when I said, you know, when he snapped at that Republican shill that was planted in the audience. And I said, you know, who knows, you know, but what maybe that's gonna harm him as well. In fact, I was of the opinion that he should have been kinder and gentler to the guy, only because the main media pitch on him, the main spin that's being put on Howard Dean, mostly by cons, but also it's been so echoed and so drumbeated out there by the cons and by the Republicans that the media has picked it up, is that he's an angry guy. So he should be going out of his way to be passionate at appropriate times, but not angry. And so I felt, even though he was appropriately provoked, he made a mistake by telling the guy to sit down and shut up. And that was actually something that in some of the exit polls was cited by people in Iowa as an example of, geez, this guy does have a hair-trigger temper. Well, as our governor all those years that I've lived here, I never saw it. I mean, yeah, he's very much, let's get business done, let's get to the point. But I don't, I think angry is a term that has been attached to him by the Republicans in the hopes that it would stick, and he's now feeding the fuel of that, and I think it's a mistake. But if you have thoughts to the contrary, I'd be pleased to hear them. Frankly, I think that any of these guys, Kerry, Edwards, Clark, or Howard Dean, would be a candidate that I could support and that I could turn this country away from the absolutely. I mean, there are even Republicans. I mean, John McCain would make a better president than George W. Bush. Oh, this is incredible. Well, here, let me just share this little clip here. This is Congressman Robert Menendez. In fact, I walked by his office yesterday. We spent yesterday with Bernie Sanders. He'll be on the program tomorrow. And had a meeting with the House Progressive Caucus, a few folks from the offices of some of the members. And then, of course, flew home. So anyhow, here's Robert Menendez, a Democrat of New Jersey, on his thoughts on the State of the Union. I thought he summarized this stuff really well.
I can't believe that the president looks straight in the camera and still tries to, after having misled the Congress last year on the question of Iraq and Iraq seeking uranium out of Niger, and having misled the Congress last year, to talk this year and still try to make the connection between weapons of mass destruction as a justification for the invasion of Iraq. And, of course, we didn't hear anything about Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, which the CIA says is the number one domestic threat here in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that mind-boggling? I mean, just absolutely mind-boggling that Bush had the audacity to look us right in the face and say, weapons of mass destruction, already the Key Report identified dozens of weapons of mass destruction related program activities. Well, let's see, what could this be? I mean, we don't know, because what David Kay said is, and I quote, "Not a single item has been found in Iraq from a long and classified intelligence list of weapons of mass destruction," and end quote. And another one, quote, from his report, quote, "We have not uncovered evidence that Iraq undertook steps to build nuclear weapons or produce fissile material," end quote. And another, also from this, about the biological mobile production efforts, quote, "Iraq did not have a large, ongoing, centrally controlled chemical weapons program after 1991. So, weapons of mass destruction related program activity. Well, let's see, to have a program, now they've already said that you could define a program as one scientist who knows how to build a bomb. And what would an activity related to that be? Providing electricity to his house so his light bulbs work? I mean, this is how far out into space these guys have gotten. In fact, that's one of our misrepresentations of the truth. If you pick the right number here, we'll send you a book. That's one of our miss. I mean, this is absolutely astounding. This State of the Union address, and this is the White House that says, we're not poll-driven, even though they take polls internally every single day. This is the most poll-driven, image-conscious administration in the history of America. Take every opportunity to ask not what is best for the American people, but rather what is going to advance our political agenda, our hold on power, and the interests of our wealthy corporate donors. And and it was just so conspicuous in that speech last night, as Representative Menendez points out. Just extraordinary.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program. Take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People asking questions, lost in confusion. Well, I tell them there's no
Welcome back. Offering solutions and not false promises. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And we are back here in the Athenwood studio in central Vermont, speaking from high up in the mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, where it is snowing. Another beautiful day. It was zero when I got up this morning. It is chilly here. Anyhow, this hour we're talking about the State of the Union. Next hour we are going to have, it's our Thursday afternoon, Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, and we're going to have on the author of the Shadow Government book, and the question will be, what could Bush do if he declared a national emergency and invoked the full powers of the shadow government? This is really spooky stuff. Really quite remarkable, actually, the kind of power that the president has. As I recall, dating back to Nixon, I think that it was Nixon who signed the first executive order and then piece of legislation on this. But we will find out all the details in our second hour. And in our third hour, are both our pay and jobs being shipped overseas? We're going to get into some labor issues. And also, I've got some clips from the conference that I was at on Tuesday, and give you some insights into what some of those speakers said. Some of them, particularly what Ted Kennedy's comments are remarkable, very, very insightful. And John McCain, let's hear what John McCain had to say for just a second here about the
why he didn't say stop
State of
the pork
Union.
Barrel spending. I'm going to veto the next pork barrel bill.
Poor John doesn't realize apparently that Bush likes pork barrel spending.
Next bill that shows up with money for the Cowgirls Hall of Fame, I'm vetoing. The next time we have $2 million to study the effect on the ozone layer of flatulence in cows, I'm vetoing it.
Well, he said 4% growth, and he's going to get rid of the deficit, right? But half.
Going to cut it in half.
Cut it in half.
But half,
half
of what?
Of what?
There you go.
And when?
Poor John, he's baffled.
I mean, the message tonight should have been, spending is out of control, the deficit is out of control, and we got to make some choices.
Yeah, see, now that's John McCain. He is a true conservative in the old school sense, in the Barry Goldwater, Dwight Eisenhower, Everett Dirksen. Remember Everett Dirksen? You a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you got real money. And that was back in the 60s that he said that. It's certainly the case here now. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to weigh in on these issues. Glenn from Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I was watching CNN before the show, and a little thing slipped in. They've got something called SCORE run by the Department of Defense for voting in five states and some other areas, starting with South Carolina. And what it is, you know, not only do you have the problems with electronic voting and its vulnerabilities, but now this is going on the Internet to a server run by the Department of Defense for five states where they're, you know, adds a whole nother layer of vulnerabilities, which when analyzed by, they said, 10 or 11 experts, what, they don't know how many, but let's say it was 10, and only four of them had a problem with it.
Well, yeah, this is the system, Glenn. I'm assuming you're talking about the system was pretty widely reported this morning that they're intending to use for internet voting for U.S. troops overseas.
Yeah, but only four out of ten. Well, that's 40%.
Yeah. I've got the news story here. We were going to get to that.
That's how they distort that language to make it, you know, to diffuse the issue instead of saying, it's like the old Woody Allen thing of, you know, in therapy where the wife says, he wants sex all the time. He's a maniac. He wants it two times a week or something. And the guy says he hardly ever wants sex. It's only two times a week. You know, it's like.
Awesome. I understand. It's a tough one, Glenn. You know, on the one hand, you can do your banking on the Internet. So it seems like it should be secure in some way. But on the other hand, anything on the web is vulnerable. I mean, the hackers have hacked into the CIA's website, for goodness sake. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman. Thanks for the call, Glenn. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the Democracy Zone, and we'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Turn-of-the-century railroad tycoon left a detailed record that shows how Alaska is changing. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1899, Edward Harriman, then owner of the Union Pacific Railroad, packed up his family, invited 25 scientists, artists, and writers, and led them all on a two-month trip through coastal Alaska. In the summer of 2001, documentary filmmakers Larry Hott and Diane Gary set out to recreate Harriman's journey.
And we retraced it and went to those key locations that he went to, and compared what the ecological environmental issues were there in 1899 with what those issues are today. This gives us a way of looking at two different snapshots.
For Gary, one of the most interesting aspects of the trip was the ecological changes that had occurred since Harriman's 1899 excursion.
For example, the only sea otter that he sees is a dead pelt, which he buys for $500. Over the course of the 100 years following that time, sea otters, which had then been hunted almost to extinction, have really revived.
Hott says the region's forests went in the other direction, something scientists on the 1899 expedition could not predict.
There was a forester on the trip, Bernard Fernow, who was the most famous forester in the world at the time, who looked at the Tongass National Forest in southeastern Alaska, and he said, this will never be marketable. It's too hard to get to. There's not enough of a market for it. The quality isn't so great. And then fast forward a half century, and they build huge pulp mills, and the forest is cut down at an alarming rate to the point where it becomes a national protest.
Their film, The Harriman Alaska Expedition Retraced, is available through the public television website at pbs.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back, helping you in the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. 1-800-TALK-YES is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. We've got a couple of callers on the lines here, and then I want to get to a clip of Ted Kennedy, and then this, just real quickly, this was the screaming large headline in our local paper, the Montpelier Times-Argus. CIA officers warn of looming Iraq civil war. CIA officers in Iraq are warning that the country may be on a path to civil war, current and former U.S. officials said Wednesday, starkly contradicting the upbeat assessment that President Bush gave in his State of the Union address. This report was delivered verbally this week in Washington, and they go on to talk about how the Kurds are upset, the Shiites are upset, the Sunnis are paranoid, and they quote one of the Shia leaders. This was an interview with Knight Ritter on Wednesday. A top cleric in the Shiite holy city of Najaf appeared to confirm the fear of potential civil war. Now, this is one of the four top clerics, Shiite Islamic clerics in Iraq. He says, we are saying that we don't accept the occupiers getting involved in the Iraqi affairs. He says, I don't trust the Americans, not even one blink. And he says, furthermore, if the United States went ahead with a caucus plan and ended the military occupation, the interim government wouldn't last long. He said, and I quote, the Iraqi people would know how to deal with those people. He said, smiling, they would kick them out. That's, I'm sure, a gentle phrase. Iraq in a lot of trouble, a whole world of trouble right now. You'll be hearing more about that, I'm sure, over the next few days. You heard it here first. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Frank from Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to talk about Dean a little bit.
Okay.
And I wanted to make a couple of points, some observations, and you're a pretty sane guy, so you can tell me what you think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that's right.
First of all, I don't know what the big deal is with Iowa. I mean, I've heard the numbers and things about, you know, well, Clinton only got 3%. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things.
Well, Clinton didn't run in Iowa.
Okay.
So there's, I mean, the kind of the good news is Clinton didn't run in Iowa and he didn't win in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to become president. The bad news is Clinton didn't compete in Iowa.
Okay.
I mean, if you don't compete in Iowa and you don't have a showing like Wes Clark, it's not a stain. If you compete in Iowa and you're considered the front runner and you come in third, that's called losing.
You know, I understand it's losing, but at the same time, it's a tiny state. I mean, if you come out to one of the big ones and you get pounded, that's fine. I mean, is it just that the fact that people don't feel comfortable voting with someone unless they think they're a winner? You know, so two months down the road.
Yes, to some extent. In fact, I think the major point upon which this nomination is going to turn is whether or not the nominee can be George Bush. I think Democrats have become, and not just Democrats, I mean, all the people who are voting with the Democrats, which includes a lot of Republicans, a lot of centrists. I mean, this was the largest turnout in history in Iowa, in large part because there were Republicans who were re-registering as Democrats because they're so fed up with George Bush. And so the question on people's mind is not, does John Kerry have a better health care plan than Howard Dean? Does Howard Dean have a better way to save Social Security than John Edwards? That people are way beyond that. They're looking at all of these candidates and saying, any of them is better than George Bush. Now, who's the one who can actually kick this guy out of office?
Okay.
And
I had two other things real quick.
Criteria.
Now, people, you know, even you, and I heard it on the radio last night, everybody's talking about this rant, and I mean, I've heard the tape, and I've heard, you know, the whole thing, and some people hear a rant. I hear a guy that's trying to get his people fired up, you know, from you know, a butt-kicking. And
I do, too, and in any other context, it may have been quite appropriate. But after an election, the candidate is expected to come out after the results come in, and address the press and the people, and basically the people in the room are supposed to be there as like props. The real pitch is to the camera, and say something uplifting and set the tone for the next election. And apparently you had missed the MSNBC or CNN reporting of the other three, because
it's really difficult to even watch. I only watch BBC News now because the news too infuriating right now.
You know, Kerry came on, they were doing commentary, and then these guys came on at staggered times, and that was I believe intentional. If not, it was good, you know, it worked out well. Usually they coordinate these things with the networks.
Mm-hmm.
And Gephardt came out, I forget what the order was, but Gephardt came out and basically said, well, you know, we did our best and we tried really hard. I think he was the last one. Kerry came out actually Edwards was the first, and he gave a really good 3-minute version of his stump speech that was inspiring and positive and optimistic. And he said, even though we didn't win, we're going to go on. And this was a much better showing than anybody thought. And it energized the people in the room. And it spoke to all the voters in America. Then Kerry did the exact same thing. And then Dean came in and just did a rah-rah. And it was a mistake. I mean, his own advisors are saying it was a mistake. We can try and, you know, put lipstick on this pig, but it was a mistake. And the question in my mind is it a mortal wound? Is it an Ed Muskie crying in the snow about his wife type of wound, or is it just the kind of gaffes that, like, you know, Ronald Reagan saying, I bought this microphone, you know, and then that where he'll just get over it. And only time is going to tell. He's got a big job in handling that.
Okay. I'll support anybody that they put up against Bush.
Yeah, but, and that's the thing. We all want the most electable guy. If Dean can't succeed against his own his adversaries in his own party, he can't beat Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in many ways, this process is really an excellent filtering mechanism, because whoever comes out of this is going to be the candidate who has demonstrated his electability.
Yeah, I would really like to have a candidate, somebody that stands up and says, you know what, this is the Republicans and this is the Democrats, and there is a big difference between us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, because believe me, if Lieberman gets the nomination, we're done.
He won't.
You know?
He won't. Lieberman is I don't know why he stays in it, whether it's ego or whether he, you know, really ideologically thinks that he's, you know, that the Republicans are right. I don't get it. There's no way Lieberman's going to be this party's nominee.
Okay. Well, I'm trusting you. So I almost wish I lived in New Hampshire again, so I could I could at least cast my vote there, you know?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to meet some of these guys, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I really love the show.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for calling. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. First, I'd like to make a comment about Bush, then I'd like to go on about Dean, if I may. I heard that you were talking about Bush is poll-driven.
Yeah.
I heard that he's literally poll-driven.
Yeah, I mean, they do polls every day in the White House.
Well.
And, you know, Karl Drove. Everything, every word that comes out of this guy's mouth has been run by a focus group or the result of a poll. It is absolutely incredible. There was a great detailed expose of it done
and a couple other points. Then you talked about Republicans switching over during the caucuses in Iowa.
Yeah, I don't think that was a sabotage attempt. I think that there are actually Republicans who are horrified by Bush. I know a few.
I'll buy part of that, but then let me go on to my next point, if I may, please.
I think it'll have to be your final point, because we got three other callers here.
Okay,
and
can I go on
minutes.
That?
Yeah.
Final I think point. Dean ought to go ahead and go for broke, and he ought to make his campaign, he ought to go on with his campaign and say, where is the rule of law? Where is the outrage? And then he ought to, at each speak where he speaks in presentation, he ought to have 2 points. One, the pork barrel, how it's ripping off the taxpayers, and where's the conservatives, and where's the honorable people? Why are they letting these Hooters things go in Louisiana?
Yeah, John McCain's point. Yep. And the second?
Would be the rule of law. Remember Clinton? They used it every day on the radio against him, and then attacked Bush for all his illegal activities and this administration for everything.
Good point, Armin. I got it. I appreciate the call. Well said. Yeah, absolutely. 1-800-TALK. Yes, let's move on to TR from Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, TR, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Yeah, Iowa, the painful state. I think they should have a bumper sticker. You know, we just got our candidates through all that ordeal, and now we got our kids coming up on the Iowa test of basic skills.
That's right.
Get paranoid about Iowa.
That's right.
That's
bad
not my fault. I listened to Sean Hannity yesterday, and
my sympathies.
I listened to it. I feel like a deer in the headlights with him and Rush Limbaugh and things like that. So I always feel glad to get back to you. I don't know if you've talked about this because I just tuned in this morning recently. He's talking about an invitation the White House has for the talk show hosts across the country to come to the White House every Wednesday.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of them
the
there
big guys,
yesterday.
You know.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, did you get invited to that?
No, I wasn't, and I'm sure I won't be.
What's going on there? I mean, how can they invite, you know, how can they invite some people and not others? If you're a talk show host, I would think that, I mean, is this our tax dollars at work, screening out people who, you know, want to tell the truth?
That's exactly it. This is probably the most partisan, with the, you know, with the possible exception of the Nixon administration, probably the most partisan, willing to use public funds and public office for partisan purposes administration in the history of the United States. Arguably, John Adams was worse.
We've reached a new quantum level here that I really am very upset if they're paying Karl Rove to, you know, decide who gets to come to the White House, and it all happens to be, you know, the heirs to the Nazis here that have a real message to send out and really have big plans for us. And, you know, on what basis can they just, you know, invite certain people all the time without spreading it around a little bit to other people?
Well, the bottom line is that the White House can invite anybody they want to the White House, and it's just, you know, that's just the way it is, T.R. You know, it's the reality. We don't have the fairness doctrine in the United States anymore. Ronald Reagan did away with it. And so now progressive talk radio, or even middle-of-the-road talk radio, has to compete against right-wing talk radio on the basis of rational arguments. They're on our side. On the basis of truth, it's on our side, and on the basis of audience and market share, and we're starting to pick up now. It's now that the industry has realized that talk radio is what sells, not just conservative talk radio, and more stations are saying, hey, you know, we're completely ignoring the more than half of America that voted for Al Gore. It's our time is coming. It's here. And we get a Democrat in the White House, maybe he won't invite Sean Hannity in there. Who knows? T.R., thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Joseph in Boston, Massachusetts, on the State of the Union. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome back.
Great.
I want to talk about Bush's statement about urging Congress to make the tax cuts permanent.
Yes.
And he went on his little tangent about the measly $300 for all American families, which basically couldn't afford a couch if they wanted to with that money.
Yeah. By the way, do you remember where that thing started? The $300 for everybody?
No, I don't.
Bernie Sanders introduced into Congress a bill back, I don't know, maybe it was in the first year of the Bush administration when the recession first started, that would give a one-time $300 tax rebate to every American. To absolutely everybody, you know, rich or poor, didn't matter. You know, it's too hard to sort out, right? And just $300 to everybody as a boom fiscal stimulus, and it would even go to people who were earning so little that they weren't paying income taxes, but they were paying payroll taxes, and so they'd get $300 too. Bush fought it and fought it and fought it, and then finally just, you know, lumped it in as sort of the dressing on the cake to his tax cut for the rich, and then took credit for it.
I love the fact that he didn't mention that same tax cut would benefit his buddies in the corporations by billions of dollars.
Yeah. So your point, Joyce?
Basically, I read this book called Sleepwalking Through History.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent
book. By Haynes Johnson.
And I'm 26
excellent.
Years old, so while Ronald Reagan was running the country, I was playing with toys and wasn't really paying attention. But it's scary how everything that Reagan did, Bush is doing, I think, tenfold.
Yeah, they're ideologically identical. Sleepwalking Through History by Haynes Johnson is probably the best book on the Reagan years that has ever been written. It's absolutely brilliant, and I'm pleased to find that people are reading it.
That's
Joseph,
cool.
Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Amanda is in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Amanda, welcome to the program.
Hello. Yes, I had wanted to talk to you about Kevin Phillips' new book, American Dynasty.
Yes.
And, you know, the parallels that seem to be consistent throughout the Bush family's rise with the intelligence establishment and international corporations, and that they have skated through very damning political and armament scandals without ever getting anything on them. And I just would like to hear your views on how this happens and continues to happen, and also how much of this, you know, push to war do you think is obviously related to the financial growth of the military-industrial complex.
And the Carlyle Group. And the Carlyle Group and all that. Yeah, it's there's clearly a connection there. It's all part of the same stuff. This is what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about. We are seeing it realized in our very own lifetimes. Dwight Eisenhower's warning, and of the military-industrial complex becoming so powerful that it would influence government itself. And we spend more on defense in the United States than all other nations in the world combined. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling. And I haven't read Kevin Phillips' book yet, but I intend to. Amanda, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Yeah.
Friedman Show.
This is Tom Hartman. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, when corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of, because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. Where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets. The eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
TomHartman.com. Bopping the right wing every day on the radio across the USA.
Getting it right and getting tough, using mystery science and all that stuff.
Win the water cooler wars, Tom's on your side. That's what he's for.
Welcome back.
It's time for Tom Hartman's show.
Yes, indeed. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about the State of the Union. How many lies were in it? Nobody has guessed the correct number. At least I'm using the Center for American Progress's summary. I'll give you a hint as the correct number. They've done a claim by fact, claim versus fact analysis by the Center for American Progress. And it's brilliant. I want to share more pieces of it with you as time goes on. We still have two calls to get through here real quickly. Susan in Santa Cruz, California. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air, Susan.
Yeah, hi, Tom. First of all, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I'm just going to take a wild guess and say 35 because it seemed like every other word.
Well, that's a good guess. You're a little higher than my number, but it's
a little higher.
Guess.
Okay. Well, I was just guessing because I only saw the end, or Well, I saw a few pieces of it. But I know I'm harping on this, but you know that fellow who called a few calls ago and said he wanted a clear alternative, and he was asking you about Dean, and he wanted a clear alternative, a clear Democratic alternative. And you didn't even mention Kucinich again.
I didn't mention Kucinich, Susan, because I was talking about the results of the Iowa caucuses.
Okay.
And Kucinich got less than 1% of the vote. He scored
zero.
Well,
no, that's not true. He had more than 1% of the vote. Did you watch that caucus, the one they focused on C-SPAN?
The point is you have to have 15% in Iowa to be considered viable.
I know that, but he had about 10% in the room that they were focusing on.
But that's not the threshold.
And the fact is, he made a deal with Edwards that if one or the other of them was not viable, that their people would give over their votes, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. Susan, I love Dennis Kucinich. I know him. I think very highly of him. I respect him. I would vote for him in a heartbeat. And I think Iowa has demonstrated that he's not a viable candidate.
Hopefully, in four years.
I understand you disagree with me. I got to move on to Bill from Albany. Thanks though for sharing that. Bill in Albany, you got 10-20 seconds here. Go for it. Maybe not. Maybe we lost Bill. Anyhow, okay, there's the music. It's the end of the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Susan, thanks for the call. We'll just have to respectfully agree to disagree on this. Transforming the world by revitalizing America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 2 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated opposition computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing the copies to the media, Senate officials told the Boston Globe. From the spring of 2002 until at least April 2003, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. With the help of forensic computer experts from General Dynamics and the U.S. Secret Service, the Senate Sergeant at Arms has interviewed about 120 people to date and seized more than half a dozen computers, including four judiciary servers, one server from the office of Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, and several desktop hard drives. A barrage of mortar fire struck a U.S. military encampment in central Iraq, killing two American soldiers and critically wounding a third, the military said Thursday. Insurgents fired mortars and rockets at a U.S. military encampment outside the town of Baqaba, 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, on Wednesday evening, killing the two soldiers and critically wounding another. The two deaths raised to 505 the number of U.S. service members who have died since the U.S.-led coalition launched the Iraq War on March 20th. The U.S. government should abandon an internet voting system planned by the Pentagon because hackers could easily tamper with election results, several computer science professors said on Wednesday. Military personnel and other U.S. citizens located overseas will be able to cast their ballots online for some primary and general elections this year under the Defense Department's Secure Electronic Registration and Voting Experiment rather than casting absentee ballots by mail. But their votes could be vulnerable to a range of cyber attacks that have already rocked banks, internet providers, and other businesses that operate online, said four researchers who serve on an advisory panel for the program. More IE America News after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
A dog in Britain was $47,500 better off today after an 85-year-old widow left the Staffordshire Bull Terrier the money in her will. Ruby Hughes, a widow from Yarnton, northwest of London, also left $214,000 to a rescue group for the breed and requested that her dog Susie's money be invested and the interest used for her keep. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved.
I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
In case you were busy drinking eggnog and missed this story, Bushco delivered a lovely Christmas gift to the timber industry just before the holiday break. By executive fiat, Alaska's Tongass National Forest will be exempted from the roadless rule, a provision that prohibits road building in millions of acres of our dwindling national forests. The roadless rule was designed to stop the timber giants from clear-cutting these precious natural resources. It's a rule that works. No roads, no clear-cutting. But the industry, which already has stripped a 500,000 acres of old-growth trees from the Tongass, wants more and has been using its money connections to Bush and Company to get its way. Now the Forest Service has dutifully given in, declaring that an Alaskan lawsuit effectively forced the agency to allow more logging. Hogwash. The Bushites simply chose not to fight the lawsuit, which independent legal organizations say the agency could have won. It's deregulation by capitulation. Bush bureaucrats deceptively claim that we really shouldn't fuss about this exemption because it allows logging on only about 3% of the roadless acres still available. The deception here is that this particular 3% encompasses many of the forest's oldest trees, most valuable watersheds, and the habitat of an extraordinary collection of wildlife. It's like a surgeon saying not to worry, for he's only cutting away 3% of your total body tissue. But that 3% includes your heart. The Tongass exemption is only the start of gutting the roadless rule for all of our national forests. Already, the Bushites are moving administratively to let state governors decide which forests should be roadless, giving a handful of state politicians controlling power over forests that belong to all Americans. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this giveaway to corporate interests, call the Heritage Forest Campaign at 202-887-8800.
Mr. Rogers' parenting book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Back. 23 was the magic number. 23 lies in the State of the Union address, at least the number identified by the Center for American Progress. They didn't quite call them lies. They were misstatements, malassertions, call it what it is here. And our book winner is Doug Davey of Hood River, Oregon. And Doug, congratulations. We'll be getting you a galley of The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, the new edition coming out from Random House in the next few months. The old edition, of course, is still in print. If 9/11, instead of that plane, those planes crashing into the World Trade Center towers and the Pentagon and that field in Pennsylvania, if instead they had taken out the Hart building, the Dirksen building, the White House, and Congress, and killed the majority of our leaders, of our elected officials, what would happen? Well, a shadow government would take control of the United States. Lest you think this is too far out, we have on the program today author Harry Helms. He's a published expert on clandestine and pirate radio and co-author of a technical book publisher, co-founder. This book by Harry Helms, Inside the Shadow Government, National Emergencies and the Cult of Secrecy, is fascinating. It really blows this thing open. Harry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for having me aboard, Tom.
Glad to have you here. Where did the name Shadow Government come from?
That's not original with me. I got that from the Washington Post, which on March 1st of 2002 ran a story detailing how there had been a partial activation of the shadow government in the wake of 9/11. It's a term I use to refer to the collection of procedures, laws, standby plans, facilities, and people that would be activated in case a good part of the American civilian leadership were, in effect, decapitated or taken out of action.
Okay, so what exactly is the shadow government? Are these elected officials who take the place of elected officials, or are these the aides of elected officials?
The best way to describe it, Tom, are unelected and largely unknown officials who would take the place of elected officials. And the plans by which, in effect, U.S. Constitution, our entire elected form of government, could be suspended for 6 months upon a presidential declaration of national emergency. Once the president declares a national emergency, for example, he could seize all radio and TV stations, total control of them, freeze your bank account, order you to relocate to another part of the country, order you to work at a certain job, ration food and medical care. And he could also detain you for up to 6 months without a warrant, without charges, without any sort of judicial procedure, for basically any reason whatsoever.
That's amazing. This is our, by the way, this is our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment for Thursday. And I think everything most people know is wrong. I mean, what happened to the Constitution here?
What happened is accumulation of presidential power that has started ever since World War II and has been delegated by Congress to the president through a variety of acts, most notoriously, I think, the National Security Act of 1947. And these plans originally came about to cover a contingency that the framers of the Constitution could never have imagined, and that is a sudden strike by a foreign power that could wipe out the president, Congress, and most constitutionally established leaders. Mm-hmm. What has happened over the years, however, is much like something rusting. You really don't notice it until it gets really critical, is that an enormous amount of constitutional authority has been ceded by Congress to the president and has been left up largely to his whims and to his discretions. Once the president declares a state of national emergency, and literally it can be for almost anything he deems a national emergency, such as, let's say a recount in Florida isn't going according to his liking, it would take 6 months before Congress could even hold a vote to overturn the presidential declaration of national emergency.
I remember back, my recollection is it was during the Vietnam War when Richard Nixon signed one of these executive orders, and there was about 2 weeks of major hysteria around it, and then it just kind of settled down, and everybody said, it's just the right-wing and left-wing kooks who are concerned about this, and the mainstream media left it alone, and nobody's talking about this. How come, if assuming that everything you say is true, and I mean, your book actually has the executive orders in it and documents it, why is it that, you know, the major news networks, why is it that there hasn't been a good article about this in Vanity Fair? Why doesn't Newsweek talk about this? Or is it, do they figure it's common knowledge? Or, I mean, you know, what?
I think one of the reasons is that on its face it sounds so unbelievable that your first reaction is, this cannot be true. This must not be so. It's also one of these things a bit like the prospect of one's own death. The contemplation of it is so awful that it almost is hard to get your mind around it.
Well, it is,
but still
the insurance. When I started my
research into this, my first reaction is, well, this is just somebody's paranoid ranting, right? And the deeper I got into it, especially when I started researching the executive orders issued by the president, which are freely available in the Federal Register for review, it was this almost revelatory thing for me that, oh, my God, this is real. This is not just paranoid fantasy. And it poses, I think, perhaps the most clear and present danger to our democracy, far more than perhaps even a foreign threat.
Yeah. Who would take the place of the president if the shadow government was invoked and the president was no longer around?
Well, let's suppose that everyone in the presidential line of succession were wiped out or killed in some way. And as I describe in my book, there is within a large facility in southwest of Washington, D.C., a facility known as Mount Weather. There is literally a complete standby government.
You mean these guys like show up for work every day and just sit around and say,
show up for work every day. They have tours of duties of roughly 30 days inside Mount Weather, completely sealed off from the outside world. There are standby replacements for all of the major secretaries of the government, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary
of State. So that's the executive branch.
Yes, right.
What about the legislative branch?
Unfortunately, that's not taken care of.
Oh, interesting. So this is the elevation of the presidency to that of king.
Basically, almost an imperial presidency that could stand by and take over. And what's even wilder is that throughout the country, there are individuals, prominent Americans, who are designated as what you might call interim presidents, who would serve the presidential function until new elections and an elected president could be restored.
And is there a way to find out who these people are?
Some of them have included been former Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill, former Senator Howard Baker, U.N. Ambassador Madeleine Albright. All of these have served for these times on 60-day standby status, such that if there were a national emergency and the president and all the persons in the presidential line of succession were killed, this person would be taken by fastest means possible to Mount Weather and would affect, even though they wouldn't be designated as the president, they couldn't fill that role constitutionally, they would have, in effect, all the powers and responsibilities of that office until a new president could be elected.
Yeah, remarkable. Our question for the hour, first of all, our guest is Harry Helms, the author of a book, Inside the Shadow Government. Our question for the hour, what could Bush do if he declared a national emergency and invoked the full powers of the shadow government in the event of, say, another 9/11, for example, or something similar to it? Harry, we've got a couple of callers here on the line.
Sure.
I'd like to pick up a couple of calls. Rama hung up. Never mind. We had a fellow in Santa Fe who was on the line, but Shar just notified me that he hung up. What kind of national emergency does it take to trigger this thing, and who decides it?
It is defined by the president, and as I mentioned earlier, it can be virtually anything he so decides constitutes a national emergency.
You mean like if he's losing an election?
Well, here's a real example. 1971. President Richard Nixon, you might recall, froze wages and prices for a period of about 3 weeks.
Right.
He did so by declaring a national emergency. What was the national emergency? U.S. balance of trade deficit had gotten too large. That was the national emergency. What was the authority he used? The 1917 Trading with the Enemy Act, which was passed to prohibit trading with Imperial Germany.
Right.
It was still on the books. It was still valid, and this shows how these presidential executive orders must reference either the Constitution or a law passed by Congress, but presidential interpretation of the authority granted to them under these acts is understandably quite broad. So a president, if he wants to declare a national emergency, he can almost invent any reason and make it stick.
Okay. Harry, what's the connection? We're speaking with Harry Helms, the author of Inside the Shadow Government. It's 17 minutes after the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And Harry, what's the connection between all of this and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency?
A lot of people think FEMA is the shadow government. And as I say in my book, no, FEMA is not the shadow government. FEMA is the muscle behind the shadow government.
So they're like the army for it or the police department for it, the enforcers.
Well, let's say that if a president issues a future executive order like Executive Order 9066, which was the executive order that President Roosevelt used to detain Japanese Americans for the duration of World War II, it would be FEMA who would come around and round up the detainees, who would transport them, who would house them, give them food, and keep them under a watchful eye.
Harry, I've gotten a number of emails over the last few years from people suggesting that FEMA actually already has empty concentration camps built around the United States. I always dismiss this as kind of paranoid stuff. Is there any truth to it, to the best of your knowledge and your research?
From my research, most of the detainees would be held on military bases. You might remember during the Balkans conflict when quite a few people were relocated from Bosnia to the United States as refugees temporarily, several thousands of them. And people were marveling at how rapidly we were able to transport these people here, house them, give them medical care, etc. Well, it was because
the systems were in place.
Dress rehearsal of that has already been conducted many times.
Yeah, interesting. Brian from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, is on the line. Hey, Brian, we've got about 30 seconds. Your question for Harry?
Yeah, real quick. He said that it would take about 6 months for the Congress to overthrow the martial law, but is there any way for, I don't know, the people to go out there? Or are they just like, all right, send out the tanks? You know, what can we do about it?
Good question. Harry?
It's 6 months. National Security Act 47 grants 6 months.
Harry, why don't you hold that thought
sure,
for a second?
Right,
we'll pick it up on the other side of this break, because I suspect your answer is going to take more than 10 seconds and probably appropriately should. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Harry Helms, author of Inside the Shadow Government. Everything you know is wrong, but stay tuned.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 25 minutes after the hour. This is the second hour of our Thursday afternoon program. So, of course, we are in the midst of our...
That you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Our Everything You Know is Wrong segment. We have with us Harry Helms, author of Inside the Shadow Government, National Emergencies and the Cult of Secrecy, What You Didn't Know About It. Harry, I have two quick questions. Number one, you know, echoing what Brian said, what can we do about this? And number two, what's so bad about this? I mean, you know, the scenario can be played out terribly, but shouldn't there be a contingency plan for if the government gets taken out, some sort of continuity? And then we've got a caller from Huntsville, Alabama on the line. I want to get to, too, and we've got just four or five minutes here left.
One of the answer to your question, Tom, of course we need a standby plan to deal with these emergencies. But we have a procedure for implementing plans. It's called free and open debate. It's called amending the Constitution. The problem here is that we have delegated so much power to the president with really no public debate or consideration of the consequences that we're left with the old question of, okay, who will guard the guard dog? And that is part of the problem here. We need to have, as I say at the conclusion of my book, not so much a shadow government, but a sunshine government. Let's debate openly what we do about these problems. How do we anticipate this contingency and how we respond to it? Let's not leave it to a bunch of people we don't know about making plans in a back room somewhere in Washington.
Well,
and
I think
the first question, what can we do? I think the most important thing people can do is to address their legislators, their representatives and senators, and bring these problems to their attention through their letters and emails, and try to bring about the necessary constitutional reforms to handle these crises instead of leaving it up to some obscure executive orders and presidential prerogatives.
Yeah. But these came about in large part as a consequence of something the founders never imagined, which was a nuclear weapon large enough to literally vaporize everything within 100 miles of Washington, D.C., and just render it sterile. And how then, after that happens, do you have any kind of public debate or discourse? I mean, you have absolute chaos all across the
country.
Well,
what you have that is beforehand. You have it before the emergency. For example...
It seems to me that what you should do is you should say whatever states have intact legislative bodies, they get together and they are the government, for example.
Let's fall back down to our
local control thing.
One of the things I have suggested as an alternative is that the governors of the surviving governors of the state serve
as the
national government.
Right.
Or
yeah,
perhaps
that's a good
they
idea.
Elect a replacement
yeah.
president, not
so
one
there's...
that's appointed by a secret presidential order.
Yeah. Got it. Okay, Whistle in Huntsville, Alabama. Quick question.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Harry. I just wanted to ask, if it takes 6 months to reconvene Congress, what would happen if he took that time to arrest the members of Congress that disagree with his views?
Like Hitler did with the communists.
That's a very good question. I hope we never have to cross that bridge. But in theory, president could probably do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Hitler did with the communist members of parliament after he was appointed chancellor. or prime minister. I just think that democracy is sufficiently ingrained in the American people that anything this outrageous wouldn't stand, or at least not very long. Harry, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the program today. Harry Helms, the book Inside the Shadow Government. The website for it, Harry, is
www.the-shadow-government.com.
Great. Very, very good. And a fascinating book. I recommend it very highly. You can find it, I'm sure, in bookstores, and if not, online. And of course, check out Harry's website. Harry, thanks for being with us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Turn-of-the-century railroad tycoon left a detailed record that shows how Alaska is changing. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1899, Edward Harriman, then owner of the Union Pacific Railroad, packed up his family, invited 25 scientists, artists, and writers, and led them all on a two-month trip through coastal Alaska. In the summer of 2001, documentary filmmakers Larry Hott and Diane Gary set out to recreate Harriman's journey.
And we retraced it and went to those key locations that he went to and compared what the ecological environmental issues were there in 1899 with what those issues are today. This gives us a way of looking at two different snapshots.
For Gary, one of the most interesting aspects of the trip was the ecological changes that had occurred since Harriman's 1899 excursion.
For example, the only sea otter that he sees is a dead pelt, which he buys for $500. Over the course of the 100 years following that time, sea otters, which had then been hunted almost to extinction, have really revived.
Hott says the region's forests went in the other direction, something scientists on the 1899 expedition could not predict.
There was a forester on the trip, Bernard Furneaux, who was the most famous forester in the world at the time, who looked at the Tongass National Forest in southeastern Alaska, and he said, this will never be marketable. It's too hard to get to. There's not enough of a market for it. The quality isn't so great. And then fast forward a half century, and they build huge pulp mills, and the forest is cut down at an alarming rate to the point where it becomes a national protest.
Their film, The Harriman Alaska Expedition Retraced, is available through the public television website at pbs.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We have a conservative alert. Yes, indeed, folks. This is from the BushGreenWatch.org, folks. What and how Americans are told about public health emergencies would be controlled by the White House, not by the agencies with the medical or scientific expertise to handle these crises, under a new plan proposed by the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB. The proposal would strip authority from federal health, safety, and environmental agencies and give the White House final say over how or when or even if the public is told about such emergencies as nuclear power plant accidents, outbreaks of mad cow disease, or drugs that are found to be harmful. You know, I remembering back to the SARS hysteria, I remember they had, here in Vermont, there was one case that was taken to a hospital in Burlington, and then, poof, it just vanished. We know that there were people who, with SARS who came into the United States, or at least that was reported, and then all of a sudden there was just no coverage on it. This is apparently is an extension of that kind of thing. The White House will make the only decision about whether or not you learn about the advent of mad cow disease, nuclear power accidents, on and on it goes. Our conservative alert for the day. 1-800-TALK-YES is our phone number. 1-800-825-5937. I want to get back to the State of the Union address and some of the 23 lies that George Bush told. First, we have Mark in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Tom. First thing I want to say is that Rama did a great job filling in for you.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, he's a good guy, a good friend.
I really enjoy listening to him. When I listened to the State of the Union address a couple nights ago, the thing that struck me, and tell me if you heard this also, I thought he said something about testing for a drug testing all school-aged children in America. Didn't he say that? I swore I heard him say that.
He may have. I didn't. Frankly, I have to say, Mark, I sat through the whole thing, and I kept nodding off. I have a transcript of it around here someplace. I figured I'd have to depend on it, but. It all the applause, you know, the Republicans jumping up and clapping every other, you know, sentence, and it just dragged on and on and on, and it was just what I thought was bizarre was that he spent more time talking about steroid use than he did about the environment. I mean, the State of the Union address is mandated in the Constitution. It's something that the founders put in place so that once a year the president can get up and tell us what the State of the Union is, and instead of doing that, George Bush did not do that. He did not talk about the State of the Union. He gave a campaign speech, and it was the most politicized, outrageous crock that I, in my lifetime, I've ever seen in a State of the Union address. I mean, it was mind-boggling. If he proposed to drug testing every kid in America, it wouldn't surprise me if the drug testing people are giving him contributions just like the educational testing people are.
It was just within a couple sentences of the steroid comment was we needed drug test every single school-aged child in America. And the thing I want to say about that is that they're inaccurate tests, and various things mask various things. If you eat a lot of hot sauce and ibuprofen, you might show up positive for pot. If you eat a bunch of poppy seed bagels, it might show up positive for heroin. And one of the biggest gateway drugs is caffeine. That's the one that most kids are using before they ever do anything else, and that leads to everything else anyways. And I'm also wondering if they will actually test for tobacco and alcohol these school-aged children, and if they do become positive
for
tobacco.
The most destructive and addictive of the drugs in our society.
That's right. And I'm curious, what happens if these kids are secondhand exposed to smoke by their parents? Are their parents going to get in trouble then? I mean, cigarette smokes, for example. I'm just curious how far he's going to take this, and I'm kind of afraid about it. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, remember when you had a terrorist expert on a couple months ago, right when the California fires were occurring? Do you remember that?
I'm not sure which one or what.
We had a female terrorist expert on, and I called in and had her ask, you asked her for me, if she thought that any of the California fires were related to terrorists, and she said absolutely not. And it's ironic because just weeks before that, Tom Ridge came out and said that California, watch out, you might get terrorists might use fire across your state. Well, all those nine big fires all of them supposedly were arson. They even said that men were throwing incendiary devices out of the windows of a van up in the Big Bear Mountains there in Arrowhead. And only one of the fires supposedly was caused by a person that was a lost hunter that was sending a single fire, and even that is debatable. So what's your comment on that?
Well, I don't know enough about it to comment on it. I mean, on the one hand, this administration has a lot vested in proclaiming that they've kept us safe. And so if this was some sort of, you know, terrorist act or something, you know, kind of playing it down. On the other hand, they could win a lot by saying, hey, the terrorists are among us. Look at this nasty stuff they're doing. So my guess would be that if they were caused by individuals, that they were probably arsonists rather than terrorists. I think that if and when, God forbid, Al-Qaeda or others of their ilk decide that they're going to make a statement in the United States like they did on 9/11, they're not going to do it by throwing gasoline on trees in California.
No, Tom, they said they're white guys in vans that were throwing the, just like the white guys in Texas with the cyanide gas bombs.
Tim McVeigh's old buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, still, I think that they would go for something more spectacular than that, frankly.
Okay.
They want to take credit for it, you know? They want people to know that they did it. Not necessarily, you know, so that they can be arrested, but, you know, that if you go back, and this all goes back to the Turner Diaries, which was Tim McVeigh's big book. And the Turner Diaries, you know, when there was all the talk about it and Tim McVeigh and everything, I actually bought the book and read it. And nowadays, buying that book, I'm sure, would put me on John Ashcroft's list, and probably admitting on the air that I've read it will do it if not. And it's a rather badly written novel. About a white supremacist who blows up the Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City. And as a result, the federal government cracks down on gun lovers and gun owners all across America. And as a result of that, these white Anglo-Saxon Protestants rise up. And there's a huge race war, and then there's a war against the government. And the only people who are left standing are the noble white guys, right?
With the guns?
Yeah, with the guns, right.
Yeah,
and they've killed off all the people of color, they've killed off all the immigrants, they've killed off all the bureaucrats, and they target them, and there's a whole thing, you know, and all the strategy and everything else. And McVeigh read this. I mean, it's like the folks who read Ayn Rand's book, you know, Atlas Shrugged or Fountainhead, and think, you know, that capitalists are always noble and government bureaucrats are the embodiment of evil. People read these novels and they think that there's some kind of depiction of reality, and then they go out and act on them, which is what Tim Vaiman actually did, and what the people at the Cato Institute are actually doing. You know, they're actually acting on a piece of fiction. But anyhow, in that piece of fiction, the key to making it all work is you do this dramatic act that will mobilize the God-fearing, moral, gun-owning white people. And that's why I think that they wouldn't go around lighting fires to forests. Although there's, you know, arson is certainly a well-defined mental illness that infects many, many people. And there being five or six arsonists, or even one very prolific one in the state of California, statistically, makes perfect sense. And you combine that with a lot of dry timber because of the global weather change that we've been having, and boom, you've got a disaster. I don't think it has to be a conspiracy, and I doubt it was terrorists. But what would be dangerous, according to our last guest, would be if a president was to say it was. I mean, that would really be pushing it. Mark, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I need to move along here. We've got Neil in New York on the line. Hey, Neil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom?
Yeah.
Hi. I feel like Paul Revere, whose horse broke down on the way here. Today they just passed the omnibus bill in Congress.
It was passed when?
I think it was this afternoon. It was being rushed through situation. And I don't know if most people know some of the, let's call it rubbish, that was like pushed into it.
I mean, the overtime.
Overtime is one, but that's like, I was like shocked to hear about, I mean, so many other things. They want a one day, I guess you want to call it filing of the, if you bought a gun
gun owner registration.
The 90 days goes down to one day. Within
one
24
day.
Hours of the purchase of a gun, the gun seller has to destroy the records.
Destroy it. And, like, you know, and Corzine this morning was talking about, well, what is this going to do?
This is the Leave No Terrorist Behind Act, Bill.
Yeah. And but
brought to you courtesy of the Republican Party.
Yeah, but there's so many, and I haven't heard anyone at all. And as I was saying, it's like Paul Revere with a broken leg on the horse, because
yeah.
I mean it's done. It's pushed through. It's like, you know, yeah. It's like this. Everything is this rut. You know, the deliberative body is just like, you know, on speed or something.
It's broken, Neil. Is the bottom line. I mean, we need to go back in history and find out. I think it was. In one of LBJ's administrations, but I may well be wrong. This might go back to, this could conceivably even go back to World War II. It used to be that every single one of those pieces of legislation that was in the omnibus spending bill got separately voted on by Congress.
Yes, and they lumped them. Go ahead,
yeah, and there was some point in time when Congress was facing some kind of crisis, whether it was self-induced or externally induced or what. And I frankly knew it at one time. 30 years ago, I knew the answer to this, and I've forgotten now. And Congress started lumping all these things together into this omnibus spending bill, and in order to keep the government going, and it became the primary repository for pork barrel practices and for sneaky things they don't want you to know about, because it's very, I mean, this is probably a 1,500, 2,000 page piece of legislation, at least.
And in the middle, it's one of these middle of the night deals again. I mean, it seems to be like the meetings or something going on in the middle of the night. Things are getting slipped in a lot of bills or a lot of legislation, and you know the idea of, you know, there's like about 15 items that are just little tiny items and nobody knows about them, but then they're becoming law. And, like,
right.
You know, the idea of, like, you know, the labeling, why can't we the country of origin? Well,
yeah, it's been delayed for 2 years. Country of origin labeling has been delayed for 2 years in this bill.
Yeah, but the thing is, we're trying to increase the middle class. Well, supposedly, we would like to, you know, try to have the middle class, you know, have jobs, and, you know, late, you know, work and, you know, blah blah blah. And now we're saying, well, the products that we make are not going to be accepted by a lot of foreign countries because they require that the country of origin be labeled, and so our products are not going to be, let's say, competitive, if you want to call it that. Because we now, for whomever's purpose is now being held up or, you know, pushed off for 2 years, as you're saying. So
well,
who's benefiting?
This was the agricultural industry, which has donated $1.2 million so far to President Bush's campaign for 2004. And they didn't want country of origin labeling because they were concerned that people would try to buy American, particularly with the mad cow scare right now, which they've kind of spun as being a Canadian problem, even though the evidence seems to indicate that it may not be, and we may have a much bigger problem than we know. This is very strange. Neil, thanks for the call. I appreciate your checking in with us and pointing that out. One of the things of being on the air here is that I don't have an opportunity to check the headline. I need to start doing that at the top of the hour. This is Ted Kennedy, Senator Ted Kennedy, talking day before yesterday at this meeting that I was at, talking about the need for Americans to be informed by the president, by the administration, you know, to tell the truth in the State of the Union address and in other contexts. I think it's an important and excellent commentary.
The American people are entitled to accurate information on matters of particularly foreign and defense policy. They ought to get it on everything, but particularly on foreign and defense policy.
He's talking about how we got lied into Iraq.
And when they violate that trust, they do not deserve to be back to reelected.
The they, of course, being the Bush administration.
And that's what this administration did in terms of the war with Iraq, with the intelligence information that was distorted, misrepresented, manipulated, clearly. And I document that in the statements made by the President, the Secretary of Defense, the Vice President, leading up to the war. And then, clearly, we have no policy, obviously, in the afterwar, and we're stuck with where we are today, which is complicated and difficult. But the basic point of that speech is that this President never leveled with the American people and distorted and misrepresented the facts. This is really, just finally, This is just such a complete contrast when I came to the Senate. When I came to the Senate, everyone, and I was on the Health and Human Service Committee, everyone accepted information that was provided by the department. Republicans said, well, the glass is half full. I'd say it's half full, and we got to fill it. But we had the same information. We had the same information that we were debating and discussing. Those days are gone. We never get the same or the common information. It is all the distortion, the misrepresentation, the manipulation, again, with the figures of how they're funding the No Child Left Behind bill and what they're doing, providing such a percentage increase in terms of education. It's just phony and baloney. And unless the American people, as you believe and I do, they'll make the right judgment, right decision if they get the right information. And we have to do our bit in trying to get it.
Yeah, and excellent commentary there. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, Steve in Santa Fe. Steve, we've only got about 10 seconds here. Oh, we don't even have that. Steve, hang on, I'll pick up your call on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's 10 minutes before the hour, and we'll be back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network.
Wish
we can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush. Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy. You know what I'm talking about.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Yes, friends, it is possible. We can restore democracy to our constitutionally limited democratic republic. Steve in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom. You know, Tom, I'm a Vietnam vet. I vote, I pay taxes, I serve on jury duty, and I feel helpless. I feel angry and helpless, I don't know other than to keep voting and keep voicing my opinion. I don't know that there's anything I can do to stop this elitist corporatism that's coming into my country.
Well, there's a lot you can do, Steve, and the best cure for helplessness is to get active and start being proactive. You know, join a political party, get behind a candidate, get out there and start, you know, passing out literature, go to meetings.
I do that, Tom, but do you think it really helps? I mean, we've got a guy that stole the presidency in Florida that has instituted electronic voting, and even his generals, General Franks, worried that he's going to declare martial law come the election.
Yeah, I mean, no, I really do think it helps, Steve. And I know it helps because leadership comes from the top down, but change always comes from the bottom up in the United States.
That's true, and I sure hope we can change it because we've got an evil guy in the office of president.
Well, the change is happening. I mean, people are. I attended a meeting here in Vermont a week and a half ago. We had the Secretary of State, and she and I and two other speakers gave presentations on electronic voting machines. And all of a sudden, we got the Secretary of the State of Vermont all freaked out about electronic voting machines. People all across the country are waking up to all of these different issues, Steve. They don't have this thing in the bag. And if they were to try to pull the kind of stunt that General What's-His-Name was suggesting, I have a feeling that there may be a Turner Diaries scenario, but it wouldn't be the way that the author of the Turner Diaries came up with it. I think it would be, you know, people would say, we want our democracy back. And I see that happening. We yesterday in the taxi back to the airport in Washington, D.C., Louise and I said, asked the taxi driver, a guy who had to be in his 70s, a black guy who had fought in World War II. We said, what do you think is going to happen? And he said, I think this election is going to be the first one in my lifetime where money is not going to win the election. People are going to take their country back. And I think he's right. Steve, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated opposition computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing the copies to the media, Senate officials told the Boston Globe. From the spring of 2002 until at least April 2003, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. With the help of forensic computer experts from General Dynamics and the U.S. Secret Service, the Senate Sergeant at Arms has interviewed about 120 people to date and seized more than half a dozen computers, including four judiciary servers, one server from the office of Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, and several desktop hard drives. A barrage of mortar fire struck a U.S. military encampment in central Iraq, killing two American soldiers and critically wounding a third, the military said Thursday. Insurgents fired mortars and rockets at a U.S. military encampment outside the town of Baqaba, 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, on Wednesday evening, killing the two soldiers and critically wounding another. The two deaths raised to 505 the number of U.S. service members who have died since the U.S.-led coalition launched the Iraq War on March 20th. A seven-state crime database launched with $12 million in federal funds is a more powerful threat to privacy than its organizers acknowledge, the American Civil Liberties Union alleged Wednesday after obtaining documents relating to the program. The law enforcement officials and private database company behind the Multi-State Anti-Terrorism Information Exchange, or MATRIX, contend it is merely an investigative tool that helps police quickly gather already available information on suspects. But the ACLU and other privacy advocates allege that the program too closely resembles a scrapped Pentagon program that aimed to mine a vast data pool to spot patterns useful in terrorism investigation. More IE America News after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
A hiking magazine apologized on Thursday after it published a route plan that would have sent walkers striding into thin air off the north face of Britain's largest mountain. The magazine missed out a vital bearing needed to guide climbers off the summit of the Scottish mountain in bad weather. Anyone who had followed the magazine's directions would have plunged down a sheer cliff into nearby Gardaloo Gully. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
In case you were busy drinking eggnog and missed this story, Bushco delivered a lovely Christmas gift to the timber industry just before the holiday break. By executive fiat, Alaska's Tongass National Forest will be exempted from the roadless rule, a provision that prohibits road building in millions of acres of our dwindling national forests. The roadless rule was designed to stop the timber giants from clear-cutting these precious natural resources. It's a rule that works. No roads, no clear-cutting. But the industry, which already has stripped 500,000 acres of old-growth trees from the Tongass, wants more and has been using its money connections to Bush and Company to get its way. Now the Forest Service has dutifully given in, declaring that an Alaskan lawsuit effectively forced the agency to allow more logging. Hogwash. The Bushites simply chose not to fight the lawsuit, which independent legal organizations say the agency could have won. It's deregulation by capitulation. Bush bureaucrats deceptively claim that we really shouldn't fuss about this exemption because it allows logging on only about 3% of the roadless acres still available. The deception here is that this particular 3% encompasses many of the forest's oldest trees, most valuable watersheds, and the habitat of an extraordinary collection of wildlife. It's like a surgeon saying not to worry, for he's only cutting away 3% of your total body tissue. But that 3% includes your heart. The Tongass exemption is only the start of gutting the roadless rule for all of our national forests. Already, the Bushites are moving administratively to let state governors decide which forests should be roadless, giving a handful of state politicians controlling power over forests that belong to all Americans. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this giveaway to corporate interests, call the Heritage Forest Campaign at 202-887-8800.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Will the Republican Party survive George Bush? You know, the faction that is represented by the Republican Party, the political, the stream of political thought in America that the political, that the Republican Party represents, was first incarnated as the Federalists back in the late 1780s, early 1790s, principally through the 1790s. In 1787, James Madison and John Jay and Alexander Hamilton were frantically writing the Federalist Papers, you know, begging people, number one, to ratify the Constitution, but number two, not to form factions. Please don't create political parties. It will be a disaster. And sure enough, within a year, they had the beginnings of political parties. And there were several of them. And they represented the interests of different, you know, different groups and different, and most importantly, they represented fundamentally different worldviews, fundamentally different notions of what it means to be an American in the United States of America. What does liberty mean? What does democracy mean? What is a republic? How is it organized? And there was one group that came out of that in response to the Federalists, in large part, George Washington was a Federalist, but he wasn't an ideologue. He served his two terms, and then he retired, and everybody was amazed that he retired. And all the Federalists at that point were thinking he'd serve until he died, and that this should be like hereditary succession, and there should be dynasties. I mean, Alexander Hamilton arguing that monarchy was one of the finest forms of government ever existed, the most stable. They, of course, were willing to make compromises for stability. So anyhow, yeah, George Washington is the first Federalist, but the first ideological Federalist, the first of what we would today call a conservative, was John Adams. And one of the first things he did once he got into office, when he was being attacked by the newspapers, he passed the Alien and Sedition Acts and put anybody who spoke out against him, including Luther Baldwin, a drunken guy in a bar in Newark, Delaware, as John Adams' caravan was going through town, and he made some remark about it, threw him in prison. Threw into prison the editors or publishers of more than 20 newspapers that spoke out against John Adams. So he was the first conservative. And in response to that, in reaction to that, Thomas Jefferson, two parties had formed in response to that. They were called the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans believed that we should have a republic, and the Democrats believed we should have a democracy. And they really were very similar in their philosophy, which was primarily anti-federalist. They were known as the anti-federalists. Thomas Jefferson pulled them together in 1799, and created the party that was called the Democratic Republicans, which today is called the Democrats. And around the middle 1830s, they dropped the word Republican from their title and just became known as the Democrats. But it was founded, the Democratic Party is the oldest continuously operating political party in the history of the world. And it was founded by Thomas Jefferson, and it was founded on the principles of democracy within the constraints of a constitutionally limited republic. But there's always been this other side that says, no, we should be essentially an oligarchy, an aristocracy, there's a plutocracy, there should be a wealthy, moneyed, powerful, intellectual class who rule. This line of philosophy goes back to Edmund Burke, the founder of conservative thought, or one of the early, great thinkers of conservative thought, who said that it would be a disaster if a candle maker or a hairdresser were ever allowed access to the power, the reins of power of government. It was amplified in 1953 by Russell Kirk in his book The Conservative Mind, that became the Bible for Barry Goldwater and for the entire modern conservative movement, Ronald Reagan, in which he said that there should be classes and order in society, and orders in society. So the Federalists imploded in the 1820s. They disintegrated. And in the 1830s, they were replaced by the Whigs. They kind of reincarnated. And then the Whigs imploded in the 1840s, and they were replaced by the Republicans. 1856, as I recall, was the beginning of the Republican Party. I think 1858 was their first actual convention, and their first nominee for president was Abraham Lincoln. And they started out as a reform party, but by 1870, they had become, again, the corrupt party of business interests, and have been pretty much ever since. So the question in my mind, point of this whole long little history lesson here, is will the Republican Party survive George W. Bush? Or is he doing so much damage to this nation and to his own party? I mean, here we've got the New York Times article by Richard Stevenson. Bush's huge deficit raising concerns with his conservative base. The Heritage Foundation, the Club for Growth, the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, they're all turning against him. Is he doing so much damage to his own party and those who philosophically believe in the ideals of his party, that it's going to implode like the Federalists did and the Whigs did, and make room for another? Now, there are some who would say that the Republican Party today actually did implode back in the 60s, when Barry Goldwater was nominated and Nelson Rockefeller got up and tried to talk to the convention about being rational and having a plank in the platform that deplored segregation. He got shouted down. But here now we have Brian Rydell a budget analyst at the Heritage Foundation. We've had this guy on the program before. We should get him on again to talk about this. He says, this is in today's New York Times, or yesterday's New York Times, I'm not sure which, it showed up in today's Times Argus, our paper here in Montpelier. The president used the State of the Union to defend past spending increases, and he made 8 specific calls for new spending increases, this from this guy from the Heritage Foundation, but he made 0 calls for spending cuts. He merely said focus on priorities, cut wasteful spending, and be wise with the people's money. That's not specific enough. I'd be very interested to know what specifically he thinks we should cut. And I suspect the answers might be rather unpleasant. Anyhow, let's go to the phone lines and see what you are thinking about this. Let's see, Neil from New York our last caller? Okay. So Steve in Santa Fe is the next one up. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Oh, Kurt in Salem, Oregon. I'm sorry, Kurt, you're on the air.
Morning, Tom.
Hey, Kurt.
I was wondering if you could attempt to imagine what they might possibly mean by weapons of mass destruction activities related program or whatever.
Well, I think it means
activities related program.
Right. If you're supplying electricity to a building in which weapons of mass destruction might be discussed, then that's a support activity for a program. See, they've already, back about 6 months ago, they redefined this, and they said that a program was, it could be defined as anybody having the knowledge of how to make a weapons of mass destruction or discussing it. And so now, you know, to support somebody who knows about it, if you feed them, if you give them electric lights, I mean, you know, Bush made this claim, I have seen no documentation anywhere to support it. It was one of those throwaway lines, the "see, I told you I was right." It was just one more in a long string of deceptions coming out of this guy's mouth and out of this administration. I mean, it's not just George Bush. It's the whole crowd. It's the whole bunch of them. That's my take on it, Kurt. You still there?
Yeah, that's enough, sir. That's all I have to say for now, though.
Okay. All righty. Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Our program, by the way, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, the Organic Wine Company. And by the way, the Organic Wine Company, they've been running the kind of generic ads. They've got some great products. They've got a catalog. They've got a great website. But also, if you call them, you can still get that free offer of 2 bottles of wine for just the $10 shipping cost. And 10 bucks is really pretty much what it costs to ship 2 full bottles of high-quality organic wine. Their number is 1-888-1-888-ECO-WINE, E-C-O-W-I-N-E. And also our program is brought to you by the Newsletter Factory in Atlanta, Georgia. Newsletterfactory.com is their website. Pablo in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Pablo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
Howdy. What's up?
Well, I was wondering, I've been watching CNN and MSNBC the past few days, and they have really been going after Howard Dean with, you know, pitchforks and knives over his kind of silly little post-caucus thing in Iowa.
Yeah, they're not going to let it die.
Yeah, and it occurs to me, I think it was back in October on Chris Matthews' Hardball, where Dean said that if president, he would break up a lot of these media conglomerates. You know, in no uncertain terms, he said that's something he would do.
Yeah.
And if they were just sort of lying in wait, you know, like there's no way they're going to let Dean become president if they can help it. Not exactly a conspiracy, but just where they, if they feel threatened by someone, they're going to go after him.
Yeah, when he said that, it was on Chris Matthews, and I saw that program, and I remember thinking, this is it. There are some times when you just don't say everything that's on your mind, and he should have restrained himself, and in my opinion. Maybe it's the right thing to do to always just be totally blunt, but I think in politics, discretion is sometimes useful. And which again raises the question of whether, I mean, he might have the right policies, but he might not be the right guy to be president, or
yeah,
he might.
Yeah, he might not be the right person for president, but it's obvious there's a double standard as far as how they go after Dean compared to other candidates, and particularly about President Bush.
Yeah.
Do you know the story that came out in the past week? It really hasn't been in the mainstream press about the bizarre comments he made in Canada to a press aide of the Prime Minister to Canada?
No. No, I missed that.
Yeah, it's really bizarre where basically he tells this press aide what a pretty face he has. And I mean, if you look at on a TV show, it would be this is someone with, you know, homosexual tendencies or something like that. And it was you don't see it in our press at all. But it would be interesting. I'm sure on Google or something like that, you can look it up.
I mean, the Bush was behaving as if he was trying to hit on some guy?
Not really, no. It was just sort of bizarre comments about what a pretty face this press aide had.
Oh, he probably meant it as an insult or yes, you know, semi-facetiously, because he likes to take digs at people.
But just the fact that it wasn't really reported in this country at all.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, when Dean said that on Matthews, I came on the air here the next day and I predicted that this is the end of the positive coverage for Howard Dean from the large media, from the monopoly media. You're not going to see anything nice said about him in Newsweek or Time or on CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN or Fox anymore, because he has now declared war on these guys, and they're smart and they know it. And the same way, you know, Kucinich took on Ted Koppel, and boom, the wall came down. I mean, the bricks fell on top of it. And maybe Dean's not electable either. Maybe he's just too blunt. I don't know. Time will tell. It's a tough one, but it's a shame. This is thanks for the call, Pablo. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large huge corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
She is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Banjila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Banjila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
TomHartman.com. Bopping the right wing every day on the radio across the USA.
Getting it right and getting tough, using mystery science and all that stuff.
Win the water cooler wars, Tom's on your side. That's what he's for. Ready, set, let's go. It's time for Tom Hartman's show.
And welcome back. The fabulous George W. Is the fabulous President George W. Bush a famous homosexual? Asks BettyBowers.com. Is BushGay.html? BettyBowers.com, one of the finer satire websites on the internet. But I just did this pretty. I just typed in "pretty face Bush" into Google, and boy, oh boy, oh boy. Louise just mentioned to me, she almost printed it out. Somehow I must have missed it. Maybe it was on one of the days that we were traveling down to Washington, D.C. But fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. It's, I think it's just him, you know, his habit of giving people nicknames, which Paul O'Neill thought was a way of asserting power over people, a way of intimidating people. I'm sure it's just that same thing. Jim in St. Louis is on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. What's up?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm glad to hear you back.
Oh, glad to hear you, Jim.
Yes.
Jim, you move around a lot. Are you a trucker?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Because you're always in a different city, but it's always the same Jim. That's great.
Yeah, I move around a lot. Number one, I just ordered your book, Unequal Protection. And I want to ask you about another book called Friendly Fascism. Have you heard of that?
I have. In fact, I have a copy of it around here someplace.
And I've ordered that also, and I would just want to know your opinion on it.
I think the subtitle of it is The New Face of Power in America, and it's about the rise of corporate power. But frankly, I haven't read the book, so I can't comment on
okay.
that.
Well, I just got off the phone with the dean in Vermont headquarters, and I'm extremely upset about what's going on. They're just taking advantage of this to beat down the only man that can beat Bush, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, evidently he's going to be answering these questions, and the campaign is tired of this whipping that he's taken, and that tonight he's going to start his campaign on answering all these questions.
Questions like?
Well, the beating that he's taking over this... this speech that he gave and the misinterpretation of the speech. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be talking about that tonight. He's on Letterman tonight, I believe. And
oh,
also on Diane Sawyer's show.
Uh-huh.
And he's also going to be starting to talk about the economy more. So that's mm-hmm. all going to start tonight. And I just urge your listeners that are supporting Dean, don't turn your back on him now. Now is when he needs the support. My wife and I, we've been supporting him financially since last March. And I mailed him $500. Well, my wife did. We mailed him $500 this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to need everything that we can give him right now. And I believe it's our only shot. And I appreciate your show. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim. You're absolutely right. If there is a make or break time for Howard Dean, it's right now, and those folks who support him need to be out there aggressively backing him. And as you know, listening to this program, I think very highly of Howard Dean, and I support him. And as the host of this talk show, I have to say, number one, he's not perfect in my mind, although I think he could beat George Bush. And number two, I support all of the Democratic candidates with the exception of Joe Lieberman. I think that all of them are excellent candidates. But Howard Dean has done some amazing things. He's done some absolutely amazing things and is really worthy, I think, of the support of the American people. It's just, you know, the question, is he electable? If he can pull it off, if he can get past this rough patch in the Democratic primaries, then he'll be able to win the national election. If he can't, then he can't. And, you know, here it is. It's Darwin time. And the question is, to what extent is the media going to clamp down on him because he said he's going to break them up? That's the thing that worries me, the thing that Pablo brought up. Jeff and Philly, hang on. We'll pick up your call after the break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network discussing solutions.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Turn-of-the-century railroad tycoon left a detailed record that shows how Alaska is changing. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1899, Edward Harriman, then owner of the Union Pacific Railroad, packed up his family, invited 25 scientists, artists, and writers, and led them all on a two-month trip through coastal Alaska. In the summer of 2001, documentary filmmakers Larry Hott and Diane Gary set out to recreate Harriman's journey.
And we retraced it and went to those key locations that he went to, and compared what the ecological environmental issues were there in 1899 with what those issues are today. This gives us a way of looking at two different snapshots.
For Gary, one of the most interesting aspects of the trip was the ecological changes that had occurred since Harriman's 1899 excursion.
For example, the only sea otter that he sees is a dead pelt, which he buys for $500. Over the course of the 100 years following that time, sea otters, which had then been hunted almost to extinction, have really revived.
Hott says the region's forests went in the other direction, something scientists on the 1899 expedition could not predict.
There was a forester on the trip, Bernard Fernow, who was the most famous forester in the world at the time, who looked at the Tongass National Forest in southeastern Alaska, and he said, "This will never be marketable. It's too hard to get to. There's not enough of a market for it. The quality isn't so great." And then fast forward a half century, and they build huge pulp mills, and the forest is cut down at an alarming rate to the point where it becomes a national protest.
Their film, The Harriman Alaska Expedition Retraced, is available through the public television website at pbs.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Day I took your tiny hand, put your finger in the wedding band. Daddy gave you a piece of land, made ourselves the best of plans. 40 years go by with someone laying in your bed. 40 years of things you say you wish you'd never said.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. And we had Jerry from North Carolina and Jeff from Philadelphia on the line, and they gave up during the break. Feel free to call back if you want. Boy, this this thing with the conservative... Oh, Jeff is there. Sorry about that. Hey, Jeff, this is Jeff in Philadelphia, right? Jeff?
Yes, that's right.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. It's first time listening, and frankly, I'm very much enjoying the show.
Great.
Much better than trying to listen to Rush Limbaugh and sitting there getting red-faced.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully I can make you red-faced once in a while, too. But
oh, no. Believe me,
I get red-faced
on a daily basis. Yeah. I'm more of less of the middle than of the, let's kick all their butts. As far as what Pablo was saying, you know, repeating and what I heard on news radio today, where they're all screaming about how Dean is unelectable.
Yeah.
Frankly, I'm really sick of that attitude because, as you've been saying, the media has been feeding this, you know, let's get him before he can do us some damage, and feeding about how he's unelectable. You know, frankly, Dean is the only one who will get up there, I think, and call George Bush a liar to his face.
Jeff, that I think has happened is that John Kerry, John Edwards, and Dick Ephart before he dropped out, and certainly Dennis Kucinich, Kucinich was doing this all along, but Kerry and Edwards in particular have, and Clark now, have gotten spine transplants. It's like Howard Dean showed that it was possible. And being the good politicians that they are, they said, hey, he's got a good idea. We can steal it. And now if he doesn't succeed in stealing their good ideas, you know, in taking whatever, you know, whatever strategies and techniques and whatnot that they're using, he's going to be toast. I define electable, by the way.
My problem here is that I think that they'll be sitting there going, you know, well, he lied about this. But they're not going to go up to him, you know, hit him in the head with a baseball bat and go, you know, liar. You know, admit it to the American people right now. And it's the difference between, you know, I'm an atheist. So, whenever they have atheists on news programs, they always invite Ellen Johnson from the American Atheist, who sits there and goes, that's not true. That's not the way it is. You know, very softly and calmly.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have, you know, it's the difference between sitting there and going, you know, George Bush lied to the American people and going there and standing there in a debate saying, George, stop lying. You're a liar. I can prove it. Here's the proof, people of America. Now, George, get down on your knees and apologize for being a liar.
Yeah.
You know, it's the difference. And, you know, frankly,
well, here's the bottom line, Jeff. Somebody is electable if people vote for him. Now, we have candidates who are being blackballed by the press. Dennis Kucinich, clearly, ever since he took on Ted Koppel. Howard Dean, clearly, has been blackballed by the press, in my opinion, ever since he said he was going to break up the media monopolies. They have their darling of the week. I mean, but these realities have been with us for a long, long time. You know, John Kennedy, the press fell in love with him. And Jackie, and Nixon just found himself floundering in the face of that. So those are the things. I mean, that's the field that you have to play on, and you have to figure out ways around those things. You have to figure out ways to be successful in spite of those things. And you know, Nixon ultimately did. You know, a little later on down the road, for example. And do it. And if somebody can't pull that off, what Dean needs to do, for example, is he needs to transform the perception of his behavior from you know, Dean the maniac to Dean the Harry Truman who's saying, I'm not giving them hell, I'm just telling the truth, and they think it's hell. Remember, I mean, you don't, neither of us remember when Harry Truman said that, but he said that in 1948, as I recall. And, you know, Howard Dean needs to you know, reinvent himself as Harry Truman, and or, to some extent he already has up to this point. But it's all going to, in my opinion, it's all going to hang on the next week or two and whether he can reframe this thing. This, what I think was a fundamental error, even though it was, you know, done with the right intention in at the end of the Iowa caucuses or not.
You know, at the very least, they should have had Tom Daschle on in the Democratic response to the State of the Union. He should have been on there. You know, they should have had people there ticking off lies. And, yeah.
You know, I talked to Tom Daschle night before last, and he's, I mean, just one-on-one. And he's a very decent man. I was struck by how considerate he was. I mean, I've met a lot of politicians. And he was direct, he was considerate, he was thoughtful. We only had a brief conversation. It wasn't more than 5 or 6 minutes. But I am just concerned that for him, it is alien territory to call somebody a liar. I think he has to, he really has to work to do it. Plus, his own district. I mean, he's up for re-election, and they're going after him. They're gonna do everything they can to take him out. And Debbie Stabenow told us how she had one Republican operative come up to her and say, "We're gonna take you out," in 2006. That's when she's up for re-election. And it's like dealing with the mafia, you know. It's like dealing with the mafia. And Howard Dean has stood up to them, and now the others are starting to catch that. And we'll see if he continues to differentiate himself as the only guy who's able to do it and willing to do it. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Jim in Portland, Oregon's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. It's 20 minutes before the hour.
Hi,
you're
Tom,
on the air.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple of points, one about Dean and one about Clark. I just wanted to say that if anybody is looking for like a great article to kind of pass around to others that are maybe on the fence about a candidate, there's a great interview with Dean in Rolling Stone with him on the cover. There's mm-hmm. a great interview with him. And
that was a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
You know, I'm not sure. It just came in the mail a couple days ago to me, and I'm a subscriber.
Oh, okay.
It may have been out for a while. But yeah, if people want to pass that around, it's a great interview. And then also about Clark, I've kind of been back and forth between those two, but primarily in Dean's corner. But kind of after the Iowa thing and kind of saying, well, maybe I should just check out Clark again. He was on C-SPAN yesterday, and you probably saw it or whatnot. But
I missed it.
Well, he spoke.
I was on an airplane all day.
Okay. And welcome back, by the way.
Thank
but,
you.
But he was saying like all the right things, but he was just so doggone boring. It's just I'm kind of torn because I know I really respect your opinion, and I really respect to a certain extent Michael Moore, and he's endorsing him so wholeheartedly. But I have my hesitation about him just because the whole DLC connections and. His whole lobbying background and whatnot, but I don't know. He was just so boring yesterday on his speech, and then I'm sure people will disagree with that. But then also this morning on NPR, just kind of they carried a speech of his or carried a portion of his speech, talking to some kids at a college, and he just wasn't connecting with the youth, and people were saying beforehand how they really were. Wanted to hear what he had to say, I guess they played a few quotes of him telling jokes that just nobody responded to, and that they didn't.
Yeah,
he
made a joke about how he was going to give all their names to the recruiters.
And
they looked horrified.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Think it was a joke.
I guess my point is, I just really like Dean, and I hope he's able to recover with the debate tonight and. On Diane Sawyer and whatnot, and I keep my fingers crossed for him, and I hope it's not too late.
I hope so too, and I share your concerns about Clark. Although again, if he's nominated, I'll do everything I can to help him get elected.
Absolutely.
But he doesn't. My experience of him, and I haven't met him in person, but you know, just everything I've seen on TV of him and heard on the radio and read is that if he has personal charisma, which he probably does, he doesn't project it very well. And that's a skill that's learned. I mean, you know, it's to some extent it's a set of personality characteristics that people are born with, but it's also a skill that's learned. And you get somebody who's been in politics for a decade, like Howard Dean or John Kerry, has been in politics for 20, 30 years, and he led the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. I mean, he has done leadership in a way that's more than just leadership by rank. I mean, Wes Clark was in a situation where if somebody dared to defy him, they'd be in the brig, they'd be in jail. Whereas Kerry and Dean and Clark and Edwards and Kucinich have all been in positions where they've had to encourage people. They've had to inspire people because they haven't been able to threaten them. Clark was always able to threaten people with his rank. So we'll see. We'll see. Time is going to tell. We got a few more calls here. Jerry in North Carolina. Oh, Jerry hung up again. Brad is still there. Brad in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Brad, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Welcome back.
Hey, Brad, thank you. Brad, who does our music.
Well,
cool.
Thank you. Jim just already mentioned something I was holding to make sure everybody knew about the debate tonight. I had just found out about it a few minutes ago. On FNC, which I assume is Fox News?
Probably, Fox News Channel, yeah.
Well, that's a little discouraging. I see Britt Hume and Peter Jennings are the national correspondents. I'll be questioning them. There's a couple of them of New Hampshire media people, too. But that's on 8 o'clock tonight. I usually find out the day after, so I was calling in just to make sure everybody knew it was on tonight.
All righty. Well, that should be a good one. Brad, thanks for the tip.
Hey, talk to you
1-800,
later.
Talk to you later. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. It is 15 minutes before the hour, and Laura from Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Laura, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? I'm a big Dean supporter out here in L.A., and I've actually been working to help him out in New Mexico and Arizona. And I just want to remind Democrats that Kerry and Edwards both voted for the war. Then they turned around and voted against the $87 billion for funding for the war effort. They voted for No Child Left Behind and the Patriot Act. And I worry that, it's really going to be tough to criticize these policies when you voted for it,
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned that if either of these guys get the nomination right out of the gate, the argument is going to go to Iraq and foreign policy, where George Bush wants it, where, he's polling pretty well in, and therefore it'll take away from the issues that we can win on, which are the economy, jobs, health care. And, Dean has the record. He's the first Democrat who worked to get health care. He's balanced budgets for 11 years in a row. And I just want someone who can stand, I want a choice, not an echo. And I feel that, I saw this guy on CNN or something after the Iowa debate, and he said he voted for Kerry in Iowa, but he didn't vote for Gephardt because Gephardt voted for the war. And I thought, this guy, Kerry's anti-war rhetoric, he stole Dean's message so well that this guy really believed that Kerry didn't vote for the war.
Well, I think Kerry was actually absent that day, wasn't he? There was one of the war resolutions for which he did not vote because he just didn't show up.
But he supported it at the time. I mean, I was
In Kerry's defense, I'm more in your camp than any other, frankly, but nonetheless, in Kerry's defense, I think that what he would like to say, but to say it is to risk the George Romney thing. Romney was the governor of Michigan back in the. In fact, I was working in radio news when this happened, and George Romney went over to Vietnam and he came back and he said, I was brainwashed. And because he had been a supporter of Vietnam before, he went there, he got the whole song and dance from the military, and he came back opposed to the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a Republican governor. And he said, I was brainwashed. And that was the end of his political career.
Yeah,
he
that's
was
what I'm
dead
saying.
Dead in the water.
Exactly.
And I'm concerned that if Kerry tries to take the argument, yes, I voted for the war resolution, I voted for No Child Left Behind, and I voted for them because I believed what Bush said, and Bush lied to me.
Or he tricked me. I was
right, or he tricked me.
Yeah.
Which is probably the truth. If Kerry says that, he's going to have the George Romney problem. So he's stuck in this double bind.
And again, I understand both Edwards and Kerry's reasoning for why they didn't vote for the $87 billion because they didn't want to give Halliburton the money and so forth. But if it is a war for the battles of hearts and minds, I'm just saying the GOP can really use that against him. And then the whole thing, then we're going to spend the whole general election talking about Iraq and foreign policy. And we can win on the other issues. And
right.
I just think that Democrats need to remember that. And I'm still for Dean. I want health care, and I'm gonna stay on board and hope it works out.
Well said, Laura. Thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your enthusiasm with us. It's 12 minutes before the hour. Kathy in Indiana is on the line. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Well, thank you for having me. This is my first time caller. In fact, yesterday was the first time that I ever heard of you.
Oh, great.
I'm so excited. But I do have a question for you.
How did you learn of us, Kathy?
I was just surfing the web. Voila, I found you. You know, I live in northern Indiana, and I'm in a cesspool of conservatism around here. So it was a real refreshing to tune you in and to listen, and at least there are some really real people out there that think the same way I do. I'm excited. But I do have a question.
Yes.
George Bush came up to this area two times last year within relatively a short period of time. To speak. One was at the University of Notre Dame, and I don't know where the other one was, but both times that he was there, or here, he spoke to a group of people that was by imitation only.
Right.
And I noticed that yesterday when he was on his first campaign tour, that part of his group that he spoke to were by imitation only. And my comment is this how he's going to conduct his campaign for the next several months, by imitation only, or is he afraid to get out into the real world and speak to the real people?
Well, you know, it's certainly how he's conducted his government.
Mm-hmm.
If you're with the gas industry, you're welcome by invitation to come help Dick Cheney write the energy policy of the United States. But if you're part of We the People, you know, you're kept out. So I suspect that you're going to see more and more of this. This is a guy who thinks he doesn't need the people. And that's why I think the people are going to turn on him. Kathy, thank you for the question. Thank you for your comment. And thanks for calling in. It's always great to hear from Indiana. Rita in Pittsburgh, hang on the line and pick up your call after this break. This is Tom, the IE America Radio Network. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. We'll be back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
An email that I courtesy from Ken Melman, who's the campaign manager of Bush Cheney 04. Last week, I warned you, he writes to me, that liberal special interests had pledged to spend over $400 million to defeat President Bush. Since my message to you, the Washington Post has revealed that these liberal groups have already raised over $185 million of their $400 million goal. They have already begun spending it on ads to defeat our president. This confirms that we will face a tough, well-funded Democrat attack campaign. While the Democrats will have endless soft money to spend attacking President Bush, I hope we'll have your help. Will you stand with President Bush and help build the strongest grassroots campaign in history by making a contribution today? Well, President Bush, he just can't raise money. If they only had a brain.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Now that you aren't falling down, well, you can just come around and unload your truck full of comic junk.
And welcome back. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In our chat room, Tahoe Kevin says, Tom DeLay is the poster boy for morons. And J. Kevin King, ESQ, says, Tahoe, why are you disparaging morons? Good question. Rita in Pittsburgh is on the line. Hey, Rita, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Rita.
I, too, have been searching the Internet because I'm a Dean supporter. And I can't get any sense from anyone. That was a stupid little clip that they keep playing over and over again. And I hear one Democrat after another going, oh, well, maybe he isn't our best candidate. Look, we have all these others. He is our best candidate. He speaks the loudest on most of our issues. And I am so afraid that, you know, I compare this to what they did to Gore. And it was astounding to me that after Gore was in trouble, the country did not stand behind him. Our party and our party leaders did not stand behind him. And that's exactly what's happening to Dean. The party's not defending him. The leaders are not defending him. They're letting him stuck out there alone. And we are going to be robbed of our strongest candidate. And
to what extent, Rita, do you think that that might be the result of his having implicitly said that he's going to fire Terry McAuliffe if he takes over, that he's going to clean out the Democrats in Washington,
well,
D.C.?
Well, I didn't know that he said that he would fire him.
Well, he said his exact comment was that the Democratic National Committee needs new leadership. That's the same thing as
saying. Well, he wanted Terry to get those people off his back that were cutting him up. But I'm telling you, we are losing our leader and the people. We would not have lost Gore if the country would have rose up and said, we elected this guy. We knew all of those bad things that the Republicans had done, and I don't know why there wasn't like a revolution in this country. And it's the same way with this thing with Dean. I know he's not perfect, But for crying out loud, I mean, and I'm not going to start saying things about Democratic candidates.
Rita, I got to stop you there, but it's a good rant, and I appreciate it. And you know, time will tell. But get active. Do everything you can to promote your candidate. And I'd say that to anybody for any candidate. Rita, thank you for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today, produced by Louise Hartman, Brad Walrod edited the music. Shar Jones has been running the board and engineering the program in Detroit. Thank you, Shar. And thanks to all the folks who showed up in our chat room. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
A chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics.